And Sunday morning, we came in from church and found her, and she had shot herself. Gail, I mean, I was in the, it was surreal. It was like I wasn't there, but I was cradling her, trying to clear her throat, which it was too late. I was trying to push the boys away. They were absolutely hysterical, screaming, sobbing, calling 911. I'm trying not to let them see her up close. I'm calling her dad. I'm calling my mom and dad. Of course, the devil, pretty quickly, I heard him say in my spirit, "You failed." But immediately I felt the Lord put his arm around me. This wasn't my plan, but I have a plan for Satan's disruptions. And he threw Romans 8:28 in there.
It is my joy to introduce to you an incredible friend, Chad Connolly. Chad is one of those guys, he just brightens up the room when he walks in. He's a people person, and I love that about him. And the very first time I ever met him, he came over to me, and I knew he was a friend I wanted for life. Chad, thank you so much for being on my show today.
Well, Gail, you're too sweet, and you're a friend, you and Tony both, but you're a hero. You're just flat a hero. The first time I heard you speak, I've been moved by a lot of speakers, Gail, but I'm not sure I've ever been moved to that depth by anybody like I was that day hearing you.
Thank you, Chad. You're kind. You've got to tell everybody, where are you from? Because I don't think anybody believes it.
Well, they won't. I'm from a little town called Prosperity, South Carolina. In the 1990s on television, they kind of made famous during the Clinton administration a road sign that said Clinton left and prosperity right. So no matter where I go, people have seen that sign, and I'm from the prosperity side. Now, there's some wonderful people from Clinton, South Carolina, but I'm from the prosperity side of that. And it's not a prosperous town. It's just a great little slice of Americana in the heart of South Carolina, home of, I don't know, 400 or 500 people counting all the dogs and cats.
Oh, but you told me you got a stoplight.
We do. We have a stoplight. Sometimes there's cars there.
Dude, that's a metropolis, right?
It's a huge place.
So what is it about you that makes you tick? Why are you so engaged with people?
You know, it's just the Lord. I mean, I really just hope that everywhere I go, I can be a shining light for people. I honestly, he put on my heart a long time ago that he expects us as salt and light to set the tone in every room we enter. And that's my, you know, positive affirmation for the Lord every time is, Lord, I want to be the guy who sets the tone in every room I enter. Help me to set a tone. If it's negative, help me overcome that. If it's positive, help me help make it better. And that's just been my prayer for a long, long time.
If you ever get to hear Chad Connolly speak, you will not only be moved to tears, but you will laugh, and you'll try to work through the translation of that Southern accent, for crying out loud.
Do I have an accent?
Have you always been raised in the South?
Yeah, I'm from Prosperity, grew up there, and moved back there. I went to Clemson, got my degree in engineering, went in the Army for a time, did my time in tanks. I was an armor officer, and then lived in North Augusta, South Carolina, worked for an engineering firm. But when I started my own business in the early 90s, I moved back to Prosperity to be close to my mom and dad, and that's where we live now.
Amazing. And you're an author.
I am. It just proves God can use anybody, Gail. I got an engineering degree at Clemson. As I say, I don't even know any big words. but I wrote a book called Freedom Tide that it was a God thing. I just really wanted to impress on people that the nation was founded on God's principles, the cornerstones of the free enterprise system, and the idea that the founders gave us that rights come from God, not from the state. And so I wrote a little book. I'm a reader. I love to read. And I think that part of our nation's problem is we really don't read anymore. And I just noticed that I was loving reading these 300, 400, and 500 page books, but most people look at those and go, wow, I bet that's really good, but they don't read it. And I had the good fortune, again, a God thing, of meeting a guy named Charlie Tremendous Jones. And Charlie was a Christian motivational speaker for 56 years. He had his home going 6 years ago in October. And I'd go up to the Northeast, and I'd go do meetings or take people on tours, Christian heritage tours, and I'd stop over in Mechanicsburg, Pennsylvania, and I'd get to know Charlie. And he was in the Speakers Hall of Fame. He did so much for me and just mentored me, taught me about the Word, got me reading Charles Spurgeon, got me reading Oswald Chambers. And I said one day, you know, Charlie, I think I'm supposed to write a book, and I have no idea how to write a book. He said, well, Chad, just have Michelle type out one of your speeches, take out the ain'ts and the slang and the Southern drawl, and type it out, and that becomes your book. And that's what Freedom Tide came from, as a talk I gave.
So is it a Cliff Notes of American history?
Yeah, it kind of is. You know, I wanted to include the two parts that I think have made America special, was the cornerstone of God, the foundational aspects. You know, if the foundations be destroyed, what are the righteous to do, the scripture tells us. And so we're foundationally formed on God's word. And the second part, the free enterprise system that rewards people for their effort. Direct proportion to your effort, your work, your risk, your toil, your sweat, blood, tears, you're going to be rewarded, because it's find and eat and fill it kind of thing. And so it's 80 pages. Charlie said, look, if you want people to read it, make it less than 100. And like I said, Charlie, I don't know any big words. That won't be a problem. And my about the author page is page 80. But God's blessed us. We've sold just under 60,000 books, and I've never done it through anything other than just churches and
amazing
local speaking engagements.
Amazing. And you've really just begun, because you're contagious.
You're sweet.
You are. But I've heard you speak several times, and you talk about serving America.
Yeah.
And talk about those two different reactions after coming home from the war.
Well, I didn't have to be in combat, thankfully. But I served long enough to, a lot of my buddies, were in combat, came back without all their parts. And I think it goes back to my upbringing. I saw my dad serve. He wasn't in combat either. His dad served in World War II, actually. And I just felt like, if it's good enough for them, it's good enough for me. This thing called freedom's not free, and it comes at a price. And liberty's not the freedom to do what we want. It's the freedom to do what we ought to do. And I saw the liberty of America was, the story is, all these people who loved the idea of freedom enough to lay their lives down so you and I can sit here and go to conferences like this and be around all these awesome people. That's stunning to me. And so when I raised my right hand and said, I do solemnly swear to protect and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic, right after I joined, it was when Gaddafi was bombed because he had blown up a nightclub. And, you know, as you know, we had a president then named Reagan that didn't take that stuff. And we literally, I was in Fort Knox, Kentucky, with no hair and in my officer basic training, thinking I am going to the Middle East and I'm going to be in a big old tank with people shooting at me. So it doesn't escape you that this is serious, and freedom is, it can be fleeting if you're not willing to pay the price.
And you still have a passion for America to be free.
You know, it's funny. I've been blessed. You know, Michelle passed away now 9 years ago, and I married a great woman named Dana. And both of them have told me that one thing they loved about me was my passion for the country. And I find that's amazing to me. That's just the Lord.
What is it that you desire for America?
Well, you know, I want to make our place, and it already is, you know, as bad as things seem to be, I bet every generation felt like, gosh, this is bad. But I think there's a responsibility and a heaviness, a burden on our shoulders to continue that feeling for our kids and grandkids. And it seems like we've lost more freedoms in the past few years than we've lost in 239 years of freedom. And so I think that responsibility as a Christian, as an American, as a conservative, to further and give continuity to the idea of freedom. I mean, think about even stuff like immigration, when people die to come here, that's amazing. I mean, would you hop in a leaky boat across the ocean and put your spouse and little kids in a boat to float away to a place called America that you've only heard about? But that story happens. It happens all the time. And we can't even relate to that. I mean, you can imagine, you live in Dallas. What if one of your neighbors started tearing the house apart one day and you and Tony went over and said, what are y'all doing? Well, we're leaving this freedom, and we're going to escape here and go to Cuba, and we're going to go down to McAllen, or we're going to go down to San Antonio, or we're going to go down to the beach somewhere else, and we're going to make us a boat, and we're going to float away and get away from this America place. It would make headline news. I mean, people, we can't even grasp the idea of people leaving everything they know to come to this place called America. But when you show the Lincoln Memorial or the Washington Monument or the Capitol or the White House, people the entire world identify with those symbols because it means freedom to them. That's a big deal.
So true. You know, Chad, on a personal note, you mentioned something just a moment ago that I'd like to go back to.
Sure.
I'll leave it up to you if you'd like to talk about it. But as we were walking to the room where we're doing this interview this afternoon, you and I were both talking about the price that leaders have to pay.
Yeah.
and also some deep waters. You and I both have walked through some deep waters with some losses that we can't explain. Yep. And yet you continue to build your life through that. And I'm told all the time, you know, I'm known as an encourager. I'm always upbeat. You're very upbeat. And the question to us in private now as we talk, has there ever been a down moment that you just don't get?
Yeah, oh yeah. You know, I joke that I had a down day one time. I didn't enjoy it, so I don't like those. But, you know, I did. I lost Michelle to suicide. We were married 18 and a half years, and, you know, she was the girl of my dreams. I met her in college. She gave me those two awesome little boys, and she just had some things happened. I've been really careful not to try to assign blame, because there's a lot of pieces of the puzzle, and I'm not sure anybody understands suicide and depression. I read 9 books on death, depression, and suicide trying to understand it, and about the only thing I came from there understanding is nobody understands it. And, you know, she, her mom died the day Hurricane Katrina hit New Orleans, actually. She'd had a surgery that went bad, and we'd had some things. We had a friend, a mentor that betrayed us, and just it really... it affected both of us, but it really affected her. I mean, she just sobbed. She's, how could they do that? How could they do that? How could they do that? And we were hitting our knees praying. We got 2 little boys looking at us, and we were just devastated. But, you know, we kind of came out of that, and the book actually kind of came out of that. And I didn't think it was going to be fatal or anything at all. And then when her mom died, it spun her out really bad. That was in September of 2005, and the whole fall she was not herself, just not herself. Her dad kind of came out of the funk at Christmas time, and she did too. And she actually was the general contractor on our house construction that next spring, and she was a girl I married. She was normal, and you know, she had some in and out, up and down. I'd call them more like blues than depression, though, Gail. It up and down. And she was doing phenomenal. And my grandmother actually died in the spring on Memorial Day. And I did grandmama's service. And right after that, there was a person close to her that made a criticism of the house. And Michelle just didn't take it well. It really affected her deeply. You know, that old thing about sticks and stones may break my bones, but names will never hurt me, just isn't true, because people take to heart criticism and hurt. And 2 days later, she was in the bed for 8 weeks until she put a gun in her mouth. And I knew it was bad. I knew it was deep and dark. I had no idea. In fact, I confronted her a couple weeks before, and I said, please, dear God, Michelle, please don't ever consider. She said, I'm too chicken. I can't do it. I said, good. Don't ever not be a chicken. We need you. CJ needs you. I need you. Bennett needs you. Please don't do that. And I'd spoken at Chick-fil-A the week before, and the Cathys are wonderful people. And I did their devotional, Monday morning devotional. I was so concerned that I took the boys with me. I left her with her dad in Augusta, Georgia. I had done a church service on Sunday night, and I spoke at Chick-fil-A Monday morning. And I said something, and you know this because you speak, the Lord gives you the best stuff you ever say. I said, you know, I've messed up. I've made mistakes. I've had business failures. And I looked right at my little boys. They were 9 and 5. And I said, I'm not going to be a failure with my wife and boys. And I remember thinking, Lord, that was really good. I'm going to steal that. That was good. And Sunday morning, we came in from church and found her. And she had shot herself. And, of course, the devil, pretty quickly, I heard him say in my spirit, you failed. But immediately I felt the Lord put his arm around me. And this wasn't my plan, but I have a plan for Satan's disruptions. And he threw Romans 8:28 in there. And Gail, I mean, I was it was surreal. It was like I wasn't there, but I was cradling her, trying to clear her throat, which it was too late. I was trying to push the boys away. They were absolutely hysterical, screaming, sobbing. I'm calling 911. I'm trying not to let them see her up close. I'm calling her dad. I'm calling my mom and dad. And in Romans 8:28. And, you know, I was like, Lord, all things, Lord. And he put my spirit, did you believe it yesterday? Yes, Lord, I did. Then you got to believe it today. Yes, Lord, I'm going to. And I clung to it. I absolutely clung to it. And I think that's what got me through, Gail, is I knew this wasn't God's doing. She had made a terrible decision. And I had to move on for my boys, and God ordains we move on from bad stuff.
And the verse that you refer to is all things work together.
For the good of those, not for the happiness, but for the good of those who love the Lord and are called according to his purpose. And I told the boys a million times, boys, do we love the Lord? Yes, sir. Are we called according to his purpose? Yes, sir. And I'd read that scripture from Ecclesiastes, a threefold cord is not easily broken. And I still do it. I left my 18-year-old last night at Clemson after a political event. I went to see him and he went to it with me. And I said, CJ, we're great. We're tight. And we win. And I hold my thumb up, and then I put our fingers, my fingers together, and I put my thumb up again. We're great. We're tight. We win. And, you know, I'd always just spoken stuff, positive stuff into them. You know, you're a winner. You're a leader. You're an overcomer. You're an achiever. Your name's Connolly. It means you always have your own business. You never give up. You never quit. And I wanted to give up. I kept saying that with the boys. When Michelle was dating me at Clemson, she had written out the characteristics that she wanted in a mate. And it's really humbling. It's really humbling to read that. So we came up with what we call the 12 characteristics of a Connolly man, and my boys read it. It's character and integrity and confidence, humility, commitment, perseverance, responsibility, faith, family, freedom, and fun. And they've just got it in their spirit. And she left me with so much and such a legacy. You know, I don't think we'll ever understand the mind and how deep and sometimes how dark that can be. But I look at those boys and I see her all the time. And then, of course, the Lord brought me Dana. You know, not everybody gets to see God work. And I'm just very humbled and very blessed that I've gotten to see him work.
Incredible story. Well, first of all, I am deeply sorry for the loss that you've walked through. Does the sting ever go away?
You know, I think that you get through that stuff. You don't really get over it. But I really don't try to dwell. It's funny. My son went to Summit Ministries camp in Bryan College this summer in Tennessee, and Michelle had grown up in Dalton, Georgia, and they'd never seen her house because her mom and dad had moved away by the time they were born. So I took them by, and we went to Chickamauga Battlefield. It's a Civil War battlefield where actually Michelle had a dream about, and it's why she started dating me. We were in college, and she had this dream that she and I were standing on stage in front of thousands of people at Chickamauga Battlefield. And I don't know why Chickamauga, except it was a place that she remembered as a little girl, like 20 minutes from her house in northern Georgia. And the guy she was dating was in the crowd watching me speak. And she always said, I don't know if you're elected or what, but I'm standing beside you, and he's in the crowd, and he's listening. And that was why she decided to marry me and to date me and to
amazing.
Get serious. And so I'd never told him that story. And you know, how many times now I've thought about that dream as I've stood in front of, you know, anywhere from two people to 25,000 at the Edward Jones Dome speaking for Joyce Meyer one time. And that dream came to be reality. The sting, I think, Gail, is she's not here, but God provided a soulmate, a lady, Dana, who had gone through the same tragedy of suicide, and we met on a blind date. She had two girls and I had two boys, so it's a match made in heaven, literally.
Amazing. You know what, Chad? I'm always thinking about people who need to be encouraged and people who might be listening. And I know that the rates right now for suicide and those who are thinking about it, it's the epitome of no hope.
Yep.
And here we have someone named Hope.
Yep.
Jesus Christ himself.
That's right.
Hope. And I wonder, what could you tell that person listening today who just thinks, you know, I'm stuck. There's nowhere to go. I just don't want to do this thing called life anymore.
Yep. You know what I'd tell them is I would tell them from the depth of my soul, take a day and look around you at all the people that you impact. You know, I never did that with Michelle. I thought she knew it, and maybe I assumed it, and I try hard not to go back and think I can redo it. But I just wish anybody who thinks that would take a good hard look at the ripple effect, because you know, from her funeral to, I have people come to me now, Gail, and say, you and Michelle made a difference in my life. Michelle said this to me. She encouraged me. And I bet everybody in the world, no matter who they are, that they've been an impactful person. person for somebody that they don't recognize, because Michelle didn't recognize it. And when you're in the depth of depression, you really, it's hard looking out of the hole. And so I would say, find somebody. If you got to get their hand, let them hold you up, take a good look, peep over that edge of that bucket or that hole or that pail, whatever you're down in. Take a peep over it, look around, and look at the impact you have on other people's lives, because I have been absolutely amazed at how many people have told me that Michelle made a difference in their lives. And I think in her, in that darkness, she didn't understand that. And that's what I'd tell them, is you matter. You have mattered to more people than you will ever, ever know in your entire life.
So
and
true.
If you just look around, take a deep breath, spend some time looking around, you will realize there are so many people. I just can't tell you. I had somebody not long ago. We were actually moving my son into Clemson a few weeks ago, and it was a couple I was close to at Clemson. I was their best man. You know, Michelle never knew what a difference she made for us. And I'm just stunned at the testimonies of people who say that. And I think when people are in the throes of depression, it's very hard for them to see that. And that would be my advice, if they don't think they can see out, is stop long enough to look around. Life's worth it. Life matters. You're not here accidentally. That's what I hate about this whole Darwinism, naturalism, all that stuff, because the whole idea that you're accidental is a fallacy and a lie from the pit of hell. Your life matters. God designed you for a purpose. Our struggle is to find what God's purpose and will is for our life and match that up with what He wants us to do. And I think that's where a lot of happiness and fulfillment come from. I think when she was in it, she had a hard time seeing that. So whether it's you or somebody you love that's in the middle of this, you need to make sure you take that person or those persons and make them see the impact they have in other people's lives, because it's significant.
So true. Chad Connolly, you're the best.
Give my
love to Dana and the children. And hey, I think we all should go on a blind date together.
We need to. Thank you.
See you soon.
God bless.
This is Gail. If you're needing hope, I would like to recommend my book, Hope Sees, Beyond Obstacles, Challenges, and Disappointments. You can find it at gailmcwilliams.com/tools.